A group of 47 Republican senators has written an open letter to Iranian officials saying that any nuclear deal signed between Iran and Barack Obama's administration won't last after Obama leaves office. Iran's foreign minister said the letter is devoid of any legal value, calling it a mere propaganda stunt. And the White House criticized the letter as an effort to derail the talks. Aside from the erroneous reference to Iran's civilian nuclear program as being a nuclear weapons program, is this an attempt to undermine Obama? Were a deal to happen, would it last only through Obama's administration? Would the next administration able to revoke the agreement? What about the other countries involved in the negotiations? Don't they have a say?
Mr. Inhofe.
The political chasm in the United States between President Barack Obama and Republican lawmakers over an impending deal on Iran's nuclear program appears to be widening. 47 Republican senators in an open letter to Iran have emphasized that any nuclear deal between the U.S. administration and Iran will be ineffective unless it has the seal of Congress. They say the next U.S. president could revoke any nuclear deal that Obama signs with Iran and that future Congresses could modify its terms at any time. And this is already being seen as an effort by the lawmakers to undermine Obama in talks over the Iranian nuclear program.
Well, it is to undermine Obama, but it does raise a very serious constitutional and legal question on the American side. The fact is, Mr. Obama has a long history of playing fast and loose with his constitutional authority at the expense of Congress, even worse than other presidents have done. Now, there is something of a dilemma here. If he does not submit this to the Senate as a treaty, yes, it would only be in force while he is president and easily could be revoked by the next president. On the other hand, if he did submit it as a treaty, 47 senators is more than enough to block it in the Senate.
In reaction to the senators' letter, Iran's foreign minister said it's devoid of any legal value and is simply a propaganda stunt. Now, a look at the current course of political events in the U.S. may show that the letter of the Republicans is mostly a warning to Obama rather than a message to Iran. This has added to the already existing skepticism over whether the current political leaders in the United States can be reliable negotiating partners.
This damages the U.S. credibility in the world. The United States cannot make a decision at home, let alone at international level. This will also confuse other partners and other parties in the negotiations. Most notably, the Iranians will definitely be confused by this.
The letter of the Republican senators has made the White House to react, warning that such efforts could derail talks on Iran's nuclear program. The White House described the letter as the continuation of a partisan strategy to undermine Obama's ability to conduct his foreign policy strategy. The controversy comes at a time when Iran nuclear talks have already reached a crucial stage toward a final agreement. Yet Monday's controversial letter shows that the Republicans are becoming more vocal in their opposition to a potential Iran deal, what will, of course, appease Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in the first place.
Our guest for this edition of The Debate, ex-American intelligence linguist Scott Rickard, joins us from Orlando. And we have security studies program from MIT, Jim Walsh, who joins us from Boston. Jim, welcome. Jim Walsh, first to you. You first have Netanyahu being invited to speak to Congress, and of course, a White House was opposed to that. And now you have these 47 Republican senators writing a letter to another country, to another country's leader. This is becoming, in some respects, a charade. However, is this an attempt to undermine the talks? How do you see it?
I definitely see it as an attempt to undermine the talks. The senator, Republican senator, and remember, there were only Republicans who signed that. The Republican senator, Senator Cotton, who organized that letter, has said directly and publicly that his intention is to kill the negotiations and to prevent an agreement. And this comes on the heels of a series of highly partisan moves by Republicans, particularly in the Senate, one to fast-track a bill, the Corker bill, and others. So, but, you know, I wouldn't put too much stock in this. I don't think this is going to fundamentally change what happens at the negotiating table, and I don't think it's going to have any impact on the U.S. ability to implement this deal. But it is sad to watch, and it's unfortunate.
Scott Rickard, same question to you.
Well, unlike the SALT I and the SALT II treaties with Russia that Rose Gottmiller put together, these talks have been highly caustic and very unsuccessful and ineffective. When you look at the amount of unreasonable sanctions that have been placed on Iran, and the amount of tremendous efforts by the West and the United States and their allies in the region throughout the Iraq and Syria and Yemen, this is indicative of the sort of talking out of the side of your mouth that the West is doing during these negotiations. Now I think we've hit our third deadline when it comes to July 1st. And the outcome of these quote-unquote negotiations are more or less, in my opinion, a political delay tactic that has been used by the West for nearly a decade, and certainly the kinds of punishment that Iran has had to endure since the revolution and kicking out the Western influence and the Western domination of Iran that started in the 50s with the overthrow of Mossadegh. So this this type of activity that they're claiming to be reasonable and legitimate negotiators from the left, and also from the West, it's really not reasonable. And unfortunately, the right wing of the United States government has become just a puppet master for Netanyahu and the real apartheid Israel fascism that has arisen. And unfortunately, the militarism and the economics that have massive influence on American politics also have a much stronger influence on the Republican Party, and have created a scenario whereby, you know, Netanyahu is allowed to come as a foreign, dignitary and subvert in a treasonous way, subvert American political agendas.
Jim Walsh, I see you shaking your head in some points there. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't think the Republican Senate represents the West. Right? It doesn't even represent the Senate, and let alone the American presidency. Listen, I go by what the negotiators say. The Iranian negotiators say that the P5 plus one have been serious, that progress has been made. All the polling shows that the Iranian people want a negotiated agreement. The polling shows that the American public wants a negotiated agreement. And the P5 plus one negotiators say that Iran has been serious, and that's why I think by the end of March we're probably going to get a framework agreement, and it's because we're close to an agreement that the Netanyahu and the right wing in the U.S. are pushing back. So I don't know what all this ideological stuff is. An agreement is going to be good for all the parties. All the parties want it. Their publics want it, and we're getting close, which is why we're getting this pushback.
Well, one thing that is very perplexing here, Scott Rickard, and I'd like to have your take on it, and that is these, for example, 47 Republican senators. Now, the online statement that they have says, quote, "We will consider any agreement regarding your nuclear weapons program," this being an address to Iran's leader. Now, it says a nuclear weapons program. Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. Do you think that they are under the impression that Iran does? Or that they are aware that Iran doesn't have it, and yet they're portraying that it does? Because there is a difference there.
Well, we're talking about over two decades of rhetoric coming out of Netanyahu and other sort of messianic, apocalyptic, ideological individuals that apparently Jim Walsh fails to recognize that is in the United States. There are many individuals like this. Well, you don't have to look far to talk to individuals like Pastor Hagee out of Texas to know that there are the extremists that do exist in the United States that are far beyond anything that would be reasonable. At the same time, I don't disagree that Iran and the people of the United States and also the Iranian leadership would like to see an agreement. Absolutely. Now, the reasonable activities around the sanctions, I don't think Mr. Walsh addressed that at all. These have been highly unreasonable sanctions. The sanctions were not necessary, and they are certainly they're subtracting from the legitimacy of the West's approach. And when I say the West, I mean the P5 plus one. And we can clearly state that these particular parties do operate in tandem when it's NATO. So NATO is the leader of the free world when it comes to the massive amounts of military and financial dominance that they have against the other countries and the developing countries, because all you have to look at is the GDPs in the countries to see that the West has a superior advantage based upon the way the financial system is structured. So no, I don't think that there is any opportunity for a legitimate negotiation when the West is actually driving the punishment and the sanctions that the Iranian foreign ministers as well as the team must accept in order to basically continue what it is, just any type of agreement that they can get to. And you're right, they do not, there is no real development of a weapons program. There hasn't been. All intelligence coming back from the CIA and Mossad and other around the world have said clearly that this is an energy-based program. And certainly you have the fanatics like Netanyahu and others that are saying otherwise.
Well, Jim Walsh, maybe you could at least explain this to us, because it appears that no matter what type of intelligence is provided, I mean, as we speak, the round of negotiations took place, inspections, I should say, and talks, I should actually clarify, between IAEA delegation here in Tehran and Iran's officials. But no matter what type of intelligence provided to reassure the international community, including the U.S., it seems like, Netanyahu is not convinced. These lawmakers are not convinced because they feel there will be a deviation. But when it comes to any country who has a civilian nuclear program, there's always that choice. So what can be done to, Iran is doing everything they can, aren't they? Aren't they complying? Aren't they having all types of man hours that they've given the IAEA inspections, et cetera. So what other alternative is there rather than the path that the U.S. has taken?
Well, I think we need to separate a couple of different things and not confuse them. I agree that I've talked to many senators and many members of Congress, and some of them and the U.S. media, parts of the U.S. media, also describe Iran's nuclear program as a nuclear weapons program. And I keep pointing out that that's not right, but they keep doing it. I think they just believe it. Now, every year, the head of U.S. intelligence, the director of national intelligence, comes and testifies before Congress, as he did last Thursday. And as he has the last several years, he says explicitly that Iran has not made a political decision to build nuclear weapons. For whatever reason, that gets ignored. I don't know why, but it gets ignored. Now, he does say that Iran did have a nuclear weapons program, which they stopped in 2003. But the important thing is they don't have a nuclear weapons program. As to the dialogue with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA has certified that Iran has been in full compliance with the Joint Plan of Action, the interim agreement. Separate from that is a dialogue between the agency and the government of Iran over what's called possible military dimensions. And that relates to things that happened in the past in the late 1990s. That process has not progressed very far. I don't expect it to progress very far until there's a comprehensive agreement. So once there's a comprehensive agreement between the P5+1 and Iran, then I expect this other set of questions relating to the past will be able to be resolved between the agency and Iran. But again, those are questions that relate to the 1990s. They have nothing to do with the current status of Iran's program, which everyone who has looked at this, who reads the testimony, if they read the testimony, then they would agree that Iran has not made a political decision to pursue nuclear weapons. It has an enrichment capability that could be used for that, but that's why we're in negotiations. That's why there's an agreement that's going to give sanctions relief for confidence building and inspection, and then this way all sides can be happy.
Very well.